I don't know about you, but I definitely need some stories of other people nailing it these days. This is Vanessa, and you're listening to the Valley Voices podcast. Today's theme, Nailed It, from New England Public Media. Today, we've got stories taped live at our first ever Pandemic Time show, live at the Academy of Music. Our storytellers showed up for this show and didn't disappoint, with wild stories of success and some misses, too. Our pals at Laudable Productions made our Zoom audience comfortable at home and feeling good. We can't wait to do these shows live again, but I think we nailed the virtual version. Our first story is from Carita Mayfield. Just how much can you learn about someone by the way they eat corn? A lot, it turns out.
Hi, I'm Carita, and I just want to let you know this is a story about sex. So, you know, please take care of your little ones. I knew the sex was going to be bad when I watched him eat an ear of corn. This was my first dating experience after my hysterectomy, which was a 10-year journey that included 3 separate surgeries, over 350 straight days of bleeding, and hormone shots in the ass, leaving me with what I fondly call the fun practice part. So Em and I, we got along great. I found him attractive. He's funny, generous, thoughtful, smart, all the things that you really like in a person and a partner. We had went on great dates. They were fun and interesting and thoughtful. You know, so we were getting along really well. And we're getting to the point of that thing that we all know of as the first sex date. So I take him to my most favorite local event, which is the Tomato Festival. And at the Tomato Festival, they have this giant barrel that they've converted to cook corn. And this corn is amazing. It is luscious and smoky and sweet. It is, if you're, you know, feeling indulgent, you can dunk it in a giant vat of butter. I was feeling it. It was good. So Emma proceeds to eat his corn. If you close your eyes and imagine a hungry T-Rex eating a bunny, that was kind of what it was like to watch him eat this corn. I mean, things were flying in the air. Corn was dripping off his chin. Mysteriously, I kept getting splashed in the face with corn juice. And all I could think was, uh-oh. If he treats me like he treats this corn, it's not going to go well. I mean, I eat my corn. I don't know if you've seen those videos of 1950s typists. You know, they kind of type really nicely, and it goes in a row and goes ding. And then I eat my corn like that. So I eat in a very nice row. It goes ding in my head. I turn the corn either 1/4 or 1/5 of the way. I start over again. I had corn for dinner. Can I tell you that my corn eating is both thorough and satisfying? But watching M's corn carnage gave me pause. But I took him home anyway. At some moment in our entanglement, he stops. And I mean like stops. And I'm like, and he pokes one of my tattoos. And he goes, so hey, what's that one mean? And I'm like, dude, can you literally get either one of your heads in the game? Like, I am here with you now. I will explain them all to you later. The night proceeds apace, and the next morning I wake up a little sad. And not sad because of the night before, but sad because I know that M cannot meet his promise of remaining friends with me. And that bums me out, sweet guy. But it was also, you know how everybody thinks like a story should have some grand learning? But here's the deal. You can't learn what you already knew. I knew how this night was gonna go. But what it left me with was a lot of confirmation. And I think sometimes confirmation is as powerful as learning. So one thing I can confirm is that my tummy, despite its scars, looks best from the side. I can also confirm that, or affirm, I hope my friends can affirm, that I don't care who you screw. I don't care how you screw. I just care why you screw. And my head and my heart and my body were not together at that moment. And finally, man, I got some good instincts. And in that way, nailed it.
That was Carita Mayfield. When Carita's not being a raconteur, she can be found in a book, in the garden, doing science stuff, making art, dreaming about being warm, and ignoring recipes despite her best intentions. If hearing her story has you thinking about what you'd tell on the Valley Voices stage, visit our website, nepm.org/valleyvoices, to keep an eye out for your chance to audition for our next Story Slam. Donna Jensen is up next with a story about reconnecting with family. Donna's story touches on abuse, so if you'd prefer not to hear it, you can always skip ahead 5 minutes and tune in to our next story.
Ever keep a secret from your family? I kept one for 40 years until I couldn't anymore. My family of origin is filled with characters, quirky, wise and stupid. My favorite family member is my niece, Melissa, my brother's daughter. We were crazy about each other. She's 8 years old and we're going to get ice cream. She turns to me and says, "We're family, but we're best friends too, right?" "Right you are, cutie pie." When I'd healed enough to come out to my family about the incest, my mother wailed, my father denied, and my brother left and took Melissa with him, claiming that I was making false accusations about her father. Didn't speak to me for 23 years, and then he died. And 23 years and 3 days later, Melissa's email changed everything. "Hi, Aunt Donna. My father died on Sunday of a heart attack. His funeral is Friday. Sincerely, Melissa." I get into a bathroom booth, press my cheek up against the cold metal door, weeping. Not tears for my brother's death, but because I was in shock that she'd reached out to me. I email her back saying, "Could I have her mailing address so I can send her condolences?" It pings back within the hour. I send cards for a year, Christmas, birthday, Easter, a little note inside, but no response, never. The first anniversary of my brother's death, I send one more card saying, "I'd hoped we'd find our way back to each other, but if that's not what she wants, I'd respect that, and this would be my last card." 1 month passes, two. I get some counseling to grieve losing Melissa a second time. And then her email comes. "Hi, Aunt Donna. I'm sorry it's taken so long to get back to you, but working full time with a baby, I really want to be in communication, but I'm not ready to talk about the 90s. And Aunt Donna, I always knew you loved me. And so we tiptoed back to each other. A year of monthly emails and one phone call. She's pregnant again. I've got a business trip near her. I asked, should we get together for coffee? She says, yeah. And then she goes into early labor, so I couldn't see her. Another year passes, more emails and one Skype call. Her baby's in her lap and the four-year-old's pressing up against her rib cage. I have another business trip and I say, "Let's get together for coffee." She says, "No, come to my house have dinner with my family. That day comes and I get a text. Hi, Aunt Donna, about tonight. Oy, she's gonna cancel. How about, well, my husband puts the kids to bed, you and I go out for a drink. Now, every other Saturday afternoon, she and the kids and I have a family kitchen table visit at 1,500 miles on Skype. And when it's all done, she says, same time in 2 weeks. And I say, you betcha, cutie pie.
That was Donna Jensen. She's a playwright, author, grandmother, and leadership coach who runs online writing circles. Join our Facebook group, Valley Storytelling Community. It's got the most recent podcast episodes, audition deadlines, and videos from recent slams. And you can learn more about other storytelling opportunities across the region in the group, too. Search for Valley Storytelling Community on Facebook to find us. All storytellers, story lovers, and listeners alike are welcome to join, post, and make connections in this space. And now for our last story. It comes from Tim Gillis, who from a young age really wanted to be great.
Hello, I'm Tim Gillis. I sell screws for a living. I've done this for 28 years. When I first started selling screws, I was embarrassed to tell people because when I first started, I was this young guy and I thought I was cool. And I thought that screws were not. But that wasn't the plan. The plan wasn't to sell screws for 28 years. The plan was to be great, whatever that looked like. When I was a young man, starting my career, I wanted to be great. Great at something, great at anything, really, just really, really great. But I had a problem. I had no idea what greatness looked like. I had this vague image in my mind that I would know that I achieved greatness when I walked into rooms and people would whisper and they'd say, there goes someone great. Do you know what he created? So I went in search of this thing called greatness. I started with art school. What better place to find greatness? And I fell in love there. Sure enough, I graduated. And with no greater understanding of what greatness looked like, and certainly no one whispering about what I had accomplished. And so, with portfolio in hand, I moved to God's country, the Grand Canyon of Manhattan, and I worked in advertising. And I fell in love again, because what better place to find greatness than New York City? And I imagined that I would rise to the level of this great art director, and I would do Nike commercials, and I'd work with Spike Lee. But I told myself I would get all that greatness stuff tomorrow. Today, I had to find a way to pay the rent. And I paid the rent by doing art direction during the day and freelance at night. And one of my freelance accounts was this quirky little screw company in Western Massachusetts, where I grew up. It was called Olympic Fasteners. Now, right about this time, I left New York City once again. No clearer understanding what greatness looked like. And once again, no one whispering about what I accomplished. And I started working at Olympic Fasteners. And the strangest thing happened. I fell in love because there was something great there. I fell in love with Art and Esther Jacobson, the owners of the company. I fell in love with Tom Wagner, who set goals just outside of my reach. I fell in love with the fact that I worked for a manufacturer. We made screws. Screws are made on these machines that are so big and so loud and so strong that they can force their will onto steel. But they are run by men and women who are even stronger because they can control those machines. And I fell in love with all of that, but I fell in hate too. I fell in hate with the fact that I felt I failed, that I had to say goodbye. Goodbye to the Grand Canyon of Manhattan. Goodbye to this pursuit of greatness. Goodbye to Spike Lee. I'd exchanged the rush of Fifth Avenue for the endless pounding of these machines. I'd exchanged my coworkers in New York City who were so proud of themselves for learning French in college, for my new co-workers, many of whom embarrassed by their English. My English is not so good, they'd say. Yeah, not as good as the one or two or three languages they learned in the country where they were born, the country that they left to come here to find a way to pay the rent. In New York City, my co-workers and I, we worked so hard to be notable. Now, my co-workers are recognized as being essential. Essential to make screws, essential to pack screws, essential to ship screws, essential to sell screws, essential to take care of our customers, all while wearing a mask to take care of ourselves and the men and women around us. So it is now ironic that it's me walking into rooms and whispering, "There goes someone great." Do you know what he did? He created a company that puts safety and respect above all else. She created teams that have fun together. They created products that changed the way buildings are built. He drove 1,000,000 miles safely. They taught sales professionals to put the interests of their customers first. And those men and women right there, standing next to their machines for hours, for days, for weeks, for months, for years, going home each night dead tired, took care of their family, put their kids through college, found a way to pay the rent. They created 1,000,000,000 fasteners so that I could sell screws for a living. Yeah, when I was a young man, I wanted to be great. Great at something. Great at anything, really, just really great. I have no idea if I've achieved that. It is not important to me anymore. But at least now, when I look at the men and women that I work with, those who turn individuals into teams, those who turn wire into screws, those who are essential, at least now, I know what greatness looks like. Thank you.
That was Tim Gillis. Tim lives in the area with his wife, 2 daughters, and his dog named Dot. He loves to tell stories to anyone who'll listen, including Dot. Be sure you subscribe to the Valley Voices podcast on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, leave us a review to help us grow our storytelling community. You can also find us on Stitcher and at nepm.org/podcasthub. The Valley Voices Story Slam is produced by New England Public Media and the Academy of Music Theater, with special thanks to Laudable Productions for helping us go digital during these pandemic times. If, like me, podcasts are keeping you sane these days, check out Word Matters, our new collaboration with Merriam-Webster. Word Matters is a show for readers, writers, and anyone who's ever loved their high school English class. You can join Merriam-Webster editors as they challenge supposed grammar rules, reveal surprising origins behind words, tackle common questions, and generally geek out about the beautiful nightmare that is language. Find Word Matters at nepm.org/podcasthub or wherever you listen to podcasts. That's all for today's episode. See you next time.